Well, this morning, as I say, Tobrone Urban, and this morning, of course, we're talking about our friend, our great friend, Jim Lane. And indeed, if you notice a little catch in my voice, folks, I won't apologise for it because, as I say, I held Jim as a very, very dear friend. I'm joined this morning in the studio by John Supple, Liam Gleeson and Tommy Mooney. Gentlemen, you're very, very welcome to the programme. Indeed, thanks very much for dropping in and, as I say, talking about the great man himself, Jim Lane. I will turn to John Supple for a start, because John, you had a great leg of him, so to speak, hadn't you?
Well, you know, I mean, the story with, you know, Jim Lane was just one in a million, there's no doubt about that. And he basically, you know, I mean, throughout the parish and beyond, he was also, you know, loved by everybody. But, you know, like, I mean, over the last couple of days, we were looking back at different stories and stuff that happened. And we did, you know, although we cried, we also had a laugh, you know. But I was just telling a very good one there, and it was only, I'd say, in the last 2 years, he used to be coming in here doing the rural reports. And
he used
to call, you know, Friday evenings was the first one. So there was two little incidents, and we'll have to what it just did.
Yes.
He used to come into Penny Max on a Friday evening. First of all, he'd get the lottery results, but then he'd go round to everybody, had he any news.
Yes.
And then he'd hand them the book, because he was getting tired of writing it down, so we'd have to write in.
Yes,
so
writing,
I remember one day he came in, and I was having a pint bologna. There was no news in the parish at that stage, known to me anyway.
Yes.
He was there anyway. You know, and he said, there's no news. There's no news this week, John, he said.
Yeah.
I said, sure, just to talk to the village. I said, have you not heard about the new roundabout going up at Quinn's Cross? What's that about? He said, they're putting in a roundabout there. I said, write it in for me. So I wrote in the roundabout and the objections against it. I thought no more of it the following morning. I was listening to it, and he came in to you, and you said,
I remember him coming in.
He said, is there any news? News, he says, there's a major. And he went on about the roundabout. Well, there was people talking about 3 days. What's the story with the roundabout? And
I'm sure he got a great racket about that.
To tell him. Yeah. And the other incident which you know sticks out in my mind was he used to call to our house for tea at maybe 11:30 on the Saturday morning, just before he'd come in to yourself.
Yes, yes.
And the Rambler would never turn off his phone.
Right, right.
So
right.
He had to phone him. So Declan Hennessy was with me out in Ardmore. Anyway, we're sitting around having a cup of tea, I suppose the sixth cup of tea around the kitchen table.
Yes.
I said, watch this, I said. So he was chatting away to you, anyway, and that's when I rang his phone, and all you could hear the Rambler talking, and all you could hear was
in his ass pocket, yes.
He was
hitting
the thing. And I remember that on three occasions I rang. Now, the tears were coming down our face at home. But I mean, you had said it for the third. Jesus, you're very popular, Jim. He said, with all
the phone calls you're getting, yes.
All the phone calls come in, he said, this been about 12:05 in or about 12:05. Johnny said, "Were you looking for me?" So of course I had to make up some excuse. But the following night, I met him and we were telling him the story with the tears are coming down his face. Yes, he said, I won't use language, but he was, you know, oh, he loved the message. He loved it, you know.
Oh, he did, yeah. Look, yeah. And he was up for anything, wasn't he?
Yeah, like,
he was up for anything.
You know, from John Supple's point of view, you know, 30 years ago, I played with Tommy and himself. I'd say they were the first two that brought me out playing the bit of music around the pubs and stuff like that.
Yes, yes.
And the fun and the crack we had with him. There will be a major hole left in the village.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
And it's not this weekend or next weekend, but give us 6 weeks' time. You know, when we drive down the village, the Jeep won't be at the bottom of it. Or when we walk into the pub or wherever we go, or the knock on the door through on the kettle.
Yeah.
For the people who were close to him, we'll miss him.
Oh, definitely. We'll miss him here terribly in Community Radio, y'all, because any time we ever went over to Ardmore, and I've said it before in the year, every time we went over to Ardmore, the red carpet was put down for us by yourself and all the committee over there in Ardmore, but especially by Jim. Because Jim would be up at the top of the village with the pipes and he'd be piping the van down the street, you know. He was absolutely amazing man. And he was the kind of man, I suppose. Look, if you asked him to take the slates off the roof at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll do it. You know, that's the kind of man he was. That's the kind of man he was. Tommy, I want to turn to you because you were great. Yourself and himself are very close.
We were pretty good friends.
Yes.
I wouldn't say Jim had any best friend as such. Everybody was
everybody, I suppose, was his friend. Yeah.
You know, but we were we played music a lot together, and that we did a summer season one time in Clonay. I'll never forget it.
Yes,
because it was an education for me.
I'd say it was.
Busloads of elderly English ladies coming in, you know, and after about 5 or 6 minutes, he'd have the meeting out of his hand. He could work the crowd, you know. That was his forte, I think.
Yeah, he
his
was
ability to do that kind of thing.
He was incredible.
Audience, yeah.
Because I've seen him in action, like, yeah. You know, and he's absolutely incredible, yeah. You know.
Definitely.
But he's, of course, he was known to Brit, a little Brit of Ardmore. He was known the little Brit of County Waterford, and
sure.
In fact, he was known the little Brit of the country.
Yes, oh yes.
That's
yes.
Quite evident, I suppose, by the huge crowd that came into him.
That's quite right.
You know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I think the first time I met him, I was trying to think on the way in with John.
Yes,
I remember he must have been about 16 or 17, I'd say, and I was about 3 years younger than him. But we used to go up every Sunday morning up the desert to Jimmy Rooney's field. I can't remember if the GA club had actually started, but they used to gather their training. You know, there'd be 30 or 40 fellas kicking around and belting one another. You know.
Yes.
And I remember Jim cycling in on a bike. That was the first time I met him with the Berry. I think Tommy Power was his hero. Little Tommy Power and Ardmore was a great footballer, you know.
Yes,
and
yes.
Tommy used to always wear a Berry, so Jim had this Berry.
Had a Berry, yeah.
He used to wear the Berry as well, you know. That was my first memory of him. It was a long time ago now.
Yes, of course he was in England for a good
while. He went to England after that then.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
I met him in England as well.
Mm.
I was strolling through Regent's Park one day. I was out sick from work.
Yes.
And I saw this fella. Jeez, he looks very familiar. And he was the Rambler.
Good.
With a gang of kids, and he's kicking football with them up in the park. Probably his own kids at that stage.
Yeah.
I'm sure he had them over there.
Yeah.
I think he had, yeah.
Incredible. Okay, absolutely
he was on a day
incredible.
Off as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I was talking about him, you know.
He was a very accomplished musician.
He wasn't. Well, he wasn't so much that he was a musician, he was an entertainer, Noel.
I suppose, you know? Yeah.
But I remember when he came back then from England, he'd worked up this act. The Western Rambler, that's how he got the name, the Rambler.
That's why, right? That's why he changed the name to Jim Lane, I think, is it?
Yeah, yes. Exactly, yeah, yes. The stage name, you know.
The stage
then
name,
then he
yes.
was dodging the taxman, who knows. But he had this poster.
That would be Jim.
He had this life-size poster outside Rooney's Bar, as it was then.
Yes.
With himself on a white horse, he's dressed in black, with a Stetson hat.
Go away, like the Sandman ad.
Advertising the Western Rambler, I was thinking that.
Go away.
It was propped up outside the door, you know.
Yes.
I can remember people coming along, you know. It looked so impressive, you know.
Yes.
It was bound to be a really hell of an act, you know, when it came off, you know.
Yeah.
And by God, it was, you know, because he was a terrific crooner. He was a fantastic singer, you know.
Yes.
He sang in the Castlebar Song Contest sometime back in the
80s,
I think.
Yes.
And he didn't win it that night, but by God, he put on some show.
He came damn close to it, he said.
He had an orchestra backing him.
Yeah.
You know, if I think he could probably have made it as a singer. I'd imagine he would have done it if he'd put his talents that way rather than, but he was a good builder as well, so I suppose
he
didn't need to take a chance, you know.
True. He was a great tradesman,
was,
a builder, a carpenter.
Work,
yeah, always,
work,
I'd say, know? Always, yeah. You know. But as well as that, I suppose, like, he learned, we said the bagpipes now, he learned them at a very late stage.
A couple of years ago only, yeah.
No, some people are quite.
I was glad that I'd moved house before he started that. I used to live right beside the beach, you know.
Well, some people said, actually, tell the truth, like, that, you know, they'd find about it, like, Jim and the bagpipes, like, you know, were. You
he
know,
mastered
were,
them.
They were strange bedfellows at the start, like,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
But after that, they really, you know.
He did, he mastered them very well, you know. I think the McCarthy lads here in town gave him a bit of help with the tuition, you know.
Yes,
they were good to him. He often told me that himself.
Because I was kind of surprised, actually, when he took up the bagpipes of all things, because he was a lovely guitar player, you know.
But he was probably losing a bit of volume in his voice at that stage, so he decided to compensate by taking up the bagpipes instead, you know. That's probably what it was, make a statement.
I remember we were down, I think, at some function in Ardmore, talking about it for the incident. We were down in Ardmore, some function down in Ardmore, and of course Jim had the bagpipes out, and he was going grand anyway, and of course he was, the hand was up, and he was blowing this thing, you know, and next minute he stopped. And he says, fucking thing is after running out of wind, he says. And you could see him saying it, like, you know, you could see him saying it.
He was able to have a laugh at himself, which is always a great sign of a bloke. Yeah,
and he had a wonderful, deep voice.
Yes.
And he was the kind of man, I'd say, that you'd feel at ease in his company.
Oh, surely.
And that sums it up, you know, really feel at ease in his company, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And well, yeah, that ability is no doubt about it.
Yeah. And I never heard him saying a cross word about anybody.
No.
No, funny enough. No, I never did. Maybe he didn't know in time, but I never did.
But generally speaking, I'd say he was a pretty genuine bloke in that respect, you know.
He's, yes.
No 2 ways about that.
Yes. Yeah. Liam, I want to turn to you, Liam. Of course, well, Liam, we're very, very welcome to the programme. Yourself and himself, you did a lot of soldiering together, didn't you?
We did. We had a good time together. To me, Jim Lane was a gentle giant.
Yes, yes.
Kind and sincere man. And above all, he was a great neighbour.
Yes.
And that's the nicest tribute you can give to any man. His talents are known far and wide, whether it be as a singer or as a musician. He could carry both off with aplomb. But to me, he was a great neighbour and a great friend.
Yes.
And we'll miss him.
Indeed, we all do. Because I think, I can remember when the late Kevin Gallagher passed away. I think I said it to you over in around Ardmore. And I said, look, I said, we're looking for a replacement for Kevin Gallagher. And you said, no, I have just a man for you, Jim. And since Jim, the minute Jim came in here and opened his mouth, he endeared himself to the radio people here, the people of Yall, people of East Cork, etc., etc. He was that kind of a way.
He had a charisma, you see.
Oh, he definitely had. Without a shadow of a doubt, he had a charisma, and there's no denying that.
And if you watch him introducing his songs, he never walked up to the mic and sang a song. He had to give a little short resume of where it originated.
Oh, yes.
Let it be any song you like, the old rustic bridge by the mill, or Dungarvan, my hometown, or whatever one he sang.
Yes.
He'd give a small, brief resume. And straight away, he had the song sold to the person who was going to listen.
Yeah, and I think that was very, very evident. And I think a lot of musicians, especially up-and-coming musicians nowadays, well, they can sing. They have a 76-piece orchestra inside in a little chip or a little box or something like that. You know, they're grand and they can perform. But when it comes to doing MC like that, you know, they hadn't the charisma. They definitely hadn't the charisma of...
A few equals.
Very, very few equals. Of course, yourself and himself, the entertainers. Tell us about the entertainers.
My God. Where would you start that story?
Where would you start with that story? Because again, I have fond memories below, I think, in the Walter Raleigh Hotel. And Misha in behind the curtain with the mini just putting on the tracks. And you two out on the stage there. And you are back in stage there. And I remember, you're talking about gurus. I can remember one instance inside when you were dressing Rennie and Renato and you were doing all that stuff, you know. And Jim came out. And of course, the area was very, very small behind the curtain, you know. And he was there and he was pulling himself up and he says, fuck, he said, the knickers is killing me. It was unbelievable. Tell us a little bit about it. Tell us a little bit about
the entertainment. Back in 1999, Rita, my wife, the wrestler, was alive at the time. And Jim had an array of talents, but he had never done mime. And I had done a little bit of back from Gertrude, where I came from originally.
Yes.
And I always had an urge to do it again.
Yes.
Because the equipment back in the 80s and 70s wasn't as good as back in the 90s and 2000s.
Oh, certainly, yes.
And you could pipe it in.
Yes.
So I went to Jim and I said, Jim, you've done everything. I said, but you haven't done any mime. And I had to explain to him what the mime was all about.
Yes, yes.
So we went up then. We spent 6 months doing a range of different artists and different instruments and duets and all that kind of, and we'd done it above at home in my office at the back of the house.
Yes, yes.
And not to mention Breeden, and Anne was very young at the time, and we used to be playing inside in the office of different instruments because we had it on a CD, so you recorded it kindly here for us, and we put all the show together. Now, we didn't put it from 1 to 7 to 6, we kind of had to play around with it to fit into the show.
Yes, yes.
We had to get it all off first. And that spent hours and hours and hours. And I remember one time about a fortnight before we went for the old, what we called the dress rehearsal, I had 5 mics up in the front of the stage, below Rooney's, we call it. And Jim, this was only a dress rehearsal now. I remember Declan Hennessy looking at me. We had 5 mics up in the stage, all different colours, you know, just to give it an effect.
Yes.
And we had those leads, which were going nowhere. And Jim came up to me and he says, where's my mic? They're out there. I said, there's 5 of them there, Jim. But where's my one? The live one. I said, I won't repeat on radio what I said to him. But I said, Jim, you have no, the man with the live radio, live magazines behind the curtain, all grown. I have it now, he says.
By the way, folks, I have to remind you, our telephone lines are open, 9119, 9228. If you want to text us in, you can text us in at 0872544745. We're remembering this morning the life and times of the late Jim Lane, of course, who passed from our midst here early last week there. If you want to contribute to the programme, if you want to send us in any comments via text or via phone messages, our telephone lines are manned. I interrupted you, Liam. We were talking, as I said there, about the live mic over in Rooney's. There's so many stories and there's so many instances that people can relate to him, isn't there?
He was very good in getting the programme ready, because the music and the numbers we picked, he knew them all off. And he could imagine, he gave the impression he was playing them during the mime.
Yes.
The biggest problem he had was when he had to sing, like, we'll say, we'll come to Jake to pay.
Oh, yes.
That was, I had only seen that years and years ago above in the Opera House in Cork with the Summer Rivers or the Swans, which one I can't remember.
Yes.
And I said, that would be a lovely one. And I said to Jim, I have the right act for you, I says, Jake to pay. So I played it 3 or 4 times or 5 times or 6 times and he got it off. Now we had to get an outfit for him to get the third leg in. So, James, you have the identical shoes. I haven't, he says, but it happened in the morning. He went to Gavin and bought 2 pairs of identical shoes. So then I had to go to Cork to get the fitting to go into the shoe, the odd shoe, we call it.
Yes.
And then I had another problem. How was I going to get the extension out of the fitting up to his hip?
Yes.
So I don't know who did I go to, but I got a hurley on it and I cut the boss off of it and screwed the rest of the hurley onto the fitting of the shoe to bring it up to Jim's hip. So then Jim Lane, God rest his soul, was not a small man. And I had to get a coat in. The trouble was to get a coat long enough to just
go... To go down to the knees, yeah.
I'd be way below the knees, yeah. covering up to the top of the shoe. Yes, that was the problem. I thought we'd have to get 2 coats and cut to him and sew it. Up to Middleton, we went to the FCA place. You know when they have the army
surplus? That's right, yes.
We got a coat there for him. We got a coat there for him, and the rest is history, is this.
I can see him on the stage there, and just coming out, I'm Jake the Pig, and he doing the mime art. It was absolutely
incredible. It was difficult to stop singing himself.
That was the problem. Yeah. And you know how I overcame it? I went down to his house one night with a speaker, where you could put in a CD.
Yes.
And I put it up in the mantelpiece. And he had a mirror going halfway down the door across the room.
Right.
And I said, now, Jim, you go over there and face the mirror. And I'll play the music behind you. Because this is what the people will see when the music is playing.
Yes.
And after about 10 or 15 minutes, but he got in his, he was rhyming.
He was rhyming.
He was miming.
And he was bang on with him.
He was spot on.
He was spot on with the miming. Yeah. We're going to take a little break now, folks, because we're going to listen to, I suppose you could say, the national anthem of Ardmore. It's Jim Lane himself, the man himself, singing My Home in Dear Ardmore. As I said there, if you want to give us a shout or give us a ring, by all means, feel free to do so on this very, very special morning that we're remembering the late but great Jim Lane. Here's Jim himself, My Home in Dear Ardmore.
Many times in childhood dreams I've strayed to a land far, far away. I've seen the grandest sight of all this whole world has today. But the grandest sight of all I've seen, and this I know for sure, it's a place I'll always long to see, my home in dear Ardmore. Now in my dreams I've sailed away upon that ocean tide, on board the grandest liner that sailed the whole world wide. I've flown the great Atlantic from shore to foreign shores, but I always wake where I belong, at home in dear Ardmore. When first I landed in New York, my story to unfold, The buildings and the motorways were something to behold. The Brooklyn Bridge, the Empire State, the Twin Towers standing tall. But the tower that stands in Dear Ardmore is the finest sight of all. I've seen the tallest building that's famed the whole world round. It's in Toronto City Fair that structure can be found. A city that's so beautiful on Canada's mighty shore. Well, I've still to see a nicer place than my home in Dear Ardmore. Now you've heard about the Rockies and of the Rio Grande, of San Francisco's Golden Gates and Californian sands. You've heard of fair Los Angeles with its many miles of shore, but none of them can keep me from my home in Dear Ardmore. I have seen the Windy City in the state of Illinois, Boston, Cleveland, Detroit too, those places caught my eye. I have seen the great Niagara Falls and I've heard its mighty roar. Then I long to be among my friends at home in Dear Ardmore. In childhood dreams I've learned to sing and write a verse or two. My childhood ways of bygone days have helped my dream come true. No matter where in dreams I've strayed, I will return once more. And when my rambling days are done, I'll settle in Ardmore. So now, my friends, my story's told, I hope you've heard me well. No matter where you chance to roam, I know the truth you'll tell. This world has many a sight to see on many a foreign shore. But in your heart, you'll always be at home in Dear Ardmore. In your heart, you'll always be at home in Dear Ardmore.
And there's no doubt about it that Jim's heart was in Ardmore. John Supple, while that was playing there, you were relating to me how that CD came about and how that particular CD came about.
You know, I mean, in fairness to Jim, if there was an idea which we had of fundraising, or if there was an idea of doing something, he was always a fella that should throw it by, because first of all, you knew that if you needed help, he was there for you, and that's the type of man he was, you know. But we decided, you know, we did two CDs over the time, but the first one was at a drop of a hat, and I remember doing it for the school. I was in the board of management time, and I remember doing it for the school, and you know, I mean, I picked singers, but what they were pub singers.
Yes.
And not necessarily, you know, Jim was the man who could play a guitar, Frankie Narch would play a guitar.
That's so right, yes.
But
yes,
some of the lads who would have sang there at the time couldn't play a guitar. So we said that we, you know, I mean, for them to go into a studio
was completely daunting for them, wasn't it?
No more than John Supple. It was my first time in there.
Yes.
So we decided to go up to Fermoy, up to Loudest Whisper. I can't think of his first name now. But
Brian O'Reilly.
Brian, yeah.
Yes,
up
yes.
to Brian. I rang Brian. I told him what I wanted to do. And Brian said, sure, that's not going to work. I said, it will. It is a local CD. And he said, so look, he said, come up. So we all went up. And we had to have one or two stops on the way
oh,
up.
Oh, naturally, yes,
and,
yes.
And a lot more on the way back
lubricate
down.
Lubricate the system, lubricate, yes. You know. Yes,
and
yes,
we,
and yes.
We all arrived up anyway, the thing anyway, and you know, like, I mean, the stories I was telling you, another great gentleman at the time was Sean Hennessy, Lord of Mercy.
Oh, Sean, yes.
And
yes.
Sean was there anyway, and we all went in, and we were nervous and stuff like that, and so Sean was singing Noreen Bawn. Sean was 82, and he sang it, and I was in the studio with Brian, and Brian says, you know, after that we did the first take, Brian said, what do you think of that? I said, shit, it's great. It's there's nothing to turn on with that. That's perfect. We will go with that. Yeah. Of course, when we went in, that we certain people took two takes. I remember the Rambler took two or three takes, and I took two or three takes of that. But I remember coming back, we stopped in a few places. And by the time, and when Sean came back to Ardmore anyway, he was the first thing to say. He said, the boys called themselves musicians. He said, two or three times to get it right. He said, I got my one right in the first go. But I remember the Rambler myself laughing at it, you know. But look, they were, you know, great sort. Like, I mean, look, the likes of Jim. He got involved in everything. I mean, in the drama, we started three
years. Well, that's right. That was another aspect of his.
He'd be in looking at the stage, telling the boys where to, you know, we'd say where to, you know, what they were doing wrong and what they were doing right. And then when we'd bring the soup and sandwiches at 1 o'clock, he'd be back in for that and the chat and the banter. So he loved it.
Absolutely.
He loved everything about Ardmore. He was so pro-Ardmore.
He was.
No matter what organisation it was, you'd never hear him. He'd give it the full backing.
Well, he would.
Tidy Towns in latter years there, you know. He took pride in everything he was doing and he just loved it. And he was such a gangster. He turned down nothing. You know, I mean, he took up the history talks.
He did, yeah.
And I remember him telling me one day, there was a few Americans.
Yeah.
Now, I'd say the history talks, you know, he might have learned a bit from, I remember the lads here taped Liam Supple, so he got the tape and he was learning a bit of the history, but Jim being Jim really had a huge amount of, so he was showing people the walls he built in the area.
Yes.
But he brought three Americans on a walk, he was telling me one day. He was telling about the Round Tower, but the history went out of his head. And do you see that house up there? He was telling them. So I think the Americans gave up halfway through. He said, this is not what
I believe, actually, during the history tour, there was somebody telling me, like, you know, that, of course, Jim used to make up a lot of it himself.
Oh, yeah.
You see? And, like, the Americans, of course, would lap it up. And there was ghosts and ghouls and goblins coming out of every corner of Ardmore. Folks, I tell you, we're after getting a couple of text messages in here, and I want to go to an ad break here. Jim Daly rang in. He wrote a poem, apparently, about 2 years ago about the late Jim Lane there. He's anxious for us to talk to him, actually. But, unfortunately, Jim, I don't think we'll get time because we're caught in a fierce time restraint this morning, but perhaps another day we might record it. But as I say, bula bust to you, Jim Daly, for ringing in there. Great memories there of the late Jim Lane there. Also, Kay Curtin rang in there from Kay's Flowers up there on the North Main Street. She's many, many happy memories of Jim coming in there buying flowers. And indeed, as well as that, text in here to say three great men gone in the 1 week from County Waterford, all named Jim. Jim Lane, a gentleman, may he rest in peace. That's sent in there from text there, Justine, and number. This morning, a special programme because we're remembering the life and times of the great Jim Lane over in Ardmore. It could cheerfully be said, I suppose, that he was Ardmore's Lord Mayor. He was a great, great ambassador, as we heard there from the lads there, all about Ardmore. Jim Nicholson from Knockanore rang in there to say he did a story about Jim Lane. Who hasn't a little story about Jim Lane? Everybody has a little story about Jim Lane. But Jim Lane, Michael Hennessy and Joe Callaghan built Jim's Nicholson's house out there in Snugborough, I think, in Knockanore there 40 years ago. It's hard to imagine. Like, we were just talking about what a great tradesman he was there, and indeed, as I said, they're absolutely marvellous there. He's a man that could turn his hand to anything there, couldn't he, Liam?
Anything. He was very talented.
Absolutely.
He was very talented.
Yes.
I mean, singing and playing instruments. And then I got him to do a couple of recitations. And
oh, yes.
He was equally good at that.
Yes. Now, you have a recitation there, haven't you?
Well, you have a thing if you'll...
No. And I told you this. We nearly had a row now, folks. Just let people into the picture now. We nearly had a row. Because Liam brought in... John Duggan's version of this little thing. But I said, no, we're not playing it. We want to hear your version of it, because I think you do a far better version of it.
No, I don't.
I've heard you before doing it.
Yeah, but anyway, Jimmy used to do it, and the first night, we only did it once on the show, because that was below Rooney's the first night.
Yes.
And we'd run along, and we had them all eating out of our hands, up to just coming up to half time, and then I got Jim to do the answers to a prayer.
Yes.
And if I did, they were all crying inside the house. What a job we have to get him back up again. We had drawn him for a raffle, the usual raffle.
Yes, 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 yes.
And we changed into a new gear again and we took off again. But they were all dead in a flat.
Yes.
So when the show was, everyone was happy, but we knew ourselves that one was the wrong one to put in.
Yes.
After that, we never put it in. Yeah.
Yes.
Jim done it in his own. He lumped it off and he done it as his party piece at,
yes,
with John Supple or with, yes, Tommy, mm, or any of, mm, the lads. Mm. He'd do a little recitation. Mm. And he was able.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. The answer to a prayer.
So you're going to do it now for us?
I mightn't do it justice, but I can.
I think you will. I think you will. I think you will.
I've always been a handyman since the day I finished school. I was never great at learning, but could always work a tool. And at the age of 18 years, I crossed the Irish Sea and chippied for McAlpine back in 1953. But back I came to Ireland, for my health was not too sound, and started doing little jobs for the neighbours all around. And still they keep me going, I still can earn my bread. At present I am busy painting Paddy Murphy's shed. If you're ever down in our town and you're walking down the street, it's there you'll see my handiwork on houses nice and neat. You see the fine post office standing stately on its own. 'Twas I who built the entrance and I painted all the stone. On the way into the chapel, I erected two fine gates, and I later roofed the convent with the best blue banger gates. I painted all the pubs in town and the garda barracks too, and that's why my dungarees are mostly colour blue. One evening last October, I met up with Father Brown, and he told me that the plaster in the church was falling down. He found it in the sanctuary, and now he lived in dread that a lump of it might fall at Mass and hit him on the head. Well, I got my longest lather and went up that very day, because working for the parish priest, you'll always get your pay. I went up behind the altar, and with no delay at all, I could see it was a leaking roof that caused the plaster fall. The place was very quiet, so I sat there for a while. And then I heard those footsteps coming slowly down the aisle. And there I saw an old man, so feeble and so grey, as to the candelabra he slowly made his way. And there he lit two candles and he placed them on the stand. From my perch above the altar I could see his shaking hand. And then he knelt and joined his hands and he began to pray. And in the stony silence I could hear what he did say. This candle is for Johnny, our son who died at 4. It nearly broke my heart the day his coffin passed our door. Oh God, I'm selfish, and I know you're meek and mild, but I never ever understood why you took our only child. This candle is for Kathleen, my lamented wife. 'Twill be just 2 years tomorrow she departed from this life. I know she pined for Johnny too, but never said a word. The two of them are happy in heaven with you, Lord. Oh, Lord, I'd love to join them and see them for a while and put my arm around Kathleen and just hold her for a while. For life for me is lonely now while living on my own, and I know you have this awful fear of dying all alone. I'd love someone beside me to hold my hand. Dear Lord, I hope you're listening to this man's only cry, and may someone be beside me when it comes my time to die. And there was I, so quietly perched, with just the swallow's view. I felt the Lord had challenged me to do what I should do. My wife was strong and healthy, and the children all had grown. They were living all around me, so I'd never be alone. I never had a moment's thought for people on their own, who lived each day the awful fear that this old man had known. And then and there I made a vow that I would be concerned. We are our brother's keepers. That's the lesson I had learned. The old man struggled to his feet and shuffled down the aisle. And it's strange, but something told me I should watch him for a while. And as he reached the chapel porch, I'm happy now to tell that right beside the waterfront, I caught him as he fell. I took him back inside the church and gently laid him down. And who came in behind me but the PP, Father Brown? And with my arms round him, I could see his dying stare as he quietly whispered, "Thank you, Lord, for answering my prayer." And with the final sacraments, the victory he had won, the Lord would now unite him with his wife and little son. And I beg for forgiveness for the idle hours I spent with not a care for others, not while I was so content. There are many, many people who are lonely all the while, who'd love to hear a cheerful voice and love to see a smile. And I suppose because I'm older now, I see the reason why we'd love someone beside us when it comes our time to die.
Well done. Now you see, listeners, wasn't I right? Wasn't I right? Wasn't yes. I right that Liam made a far, far superior recitation that than John Duggan? And I have to, I'll stick with that. I'll stick with that. Tommy, I want to come back to you because I know the time is of the essence here to us here in the programme. Tommy, your abiding memory of the late Jim.
Well, God, it's funny. John has mentioned about the drama group, and one of my abiding memories definitely is the time when he took the part of the bishop in the field.
Oh, yes.
John D. Keane's The Field. You know,
yes.
And, I think he was, I don't know if it was his first time being in a play, I don't think it was, but it was his first time for quite a while, if it was, you know. But he put on a performance.
A superb performance. I
can remember people in the audience around me blessing themselves.
They thought it was the real thing.
When he started his sermon by blessing himself, you know, and they were all going like this.
they were
almost genuflecting. And there was old Dr. Carol Vickapil,
who
was, an immigrant to Ardmore. You know, he was living up the hill. But he and Jim became great buddies over the years that he was there. Jim welcomed him in and did some building for him and that, you know.
Yes.
And he was sitting in front of me in the hall at that night.
Yes.
And he nearly collapsed. He was hysterical with laughter when he saw this happening, you know. And when Jim entered, he entered from the end of the hall.
Yes, I think that was a favourite trick, actually.
Off stage, you know. Mm-hmm. And on the way up, he touched Carl's shoulder. And Carl looked up. Oh, it's Jim! Oh, it's Jim! It's Jim. His wife was with him, you know.
Yes.
They were, oh, God, they were convulsed with laughter. Really funny.
John, I want to turn to you quickly.
Yeah.
Your last, your abiding memory of him.
Well, it basically has to be his singing voice. And what I mean by that, you know, 'twas always a big thing. If there was ever a musician in the parish, and I've always said this, and I played music, if there was ever a musician in the parish to lay down his instrument and sing with nothing, he to the day he died, he was the finest balladeer in the parish.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
He just would, and you know, his old songs, the great thing about Jim is when you'd meet him, when there was nothing planned, and he'd go into a song, it was memorising.
Yes.
And the thing with it is that
it was mesmerizing
he was just one of these guys who could
hold your
attention. He had great songs,
yeah.
And you could see when he sang the feeling be behind it. And,
oh yes,
and you know, I mean, I would sit for hours listening to him.
I think everybody would. I leave the last word to yourself, Liam. In 30 seconds, your abiding memory of Jim.
What can one say about him? Much lonelier place without him.
It will indeed.
He'd lighten up a room when he'd walk in.
He would, of course.
And we've great memories, and they will stay with us forever. May the Ardmore sod rest lightly on his chest.
And with that point, I think I'm going to leave the very, very last word to Declan Hassett, because Declan Hassett actually done a wonderful little summing up, I suppose, of Jim's life over in the church in Ardmore. As I said this morning, we're remembering there the life and times of the late Jim Lane.
I'm going to read a tribute to Dad written by Declan Hassett, and Declan will say a few words after me. It was written on the occasion of his 80th birthday party last year. And it's titled The Lone Piper. I stand on Curra's black rocks, the sullen tide spits and splutters, filling deep, dark pools. A cool westerly carries the piper's sound across the broad bay. It is almost winter's eve, time for large fires and hot whiskies, talk of summer past. The strand washes clean and lonely, reflecting not a footprint to mark the presence of another. The Angelus bell announces the difference between heaven and hell as the piper shelters and watches the swell against the storm wall stone. Children's laughter no longer fills the sacred summer air, long since retreated to city and town. A stray dog snuffles seaweed fronds, cocks an ear and casts a curious eye at pipes and man. The shadowed village rests easily as the lazy light dies behind the hill and my piper sits alone again. A guitar is his companion now, as he fingers some John O'Dream's song. He hums the glorious Is Erin Ninesan Kehi, a duet, this time for one voice. A rare passerby wonders if he knows the one about. Jim says he didn't, but sings for him where the Mulcair River flows. Soon the music dies as the singer and the song move by St. Declan's Hall. The piper thinks of St. Luke, the minstrel boy, a night visitor in a glistening sky over tower, cathedral, and on Bannockburn. And the melody, it lingers on.
Of course, there, that was a piece that was written by Declan Hassett there and was recited there, ironically enough, by Declan there. That's Jim's son there. Beautiful little piece, and it sums up Jim's life. Lads, can I thank you one and all for coming in? Of course, my special guests this morning were John Supple, Liam Gleeson, and Tommy Mooney from Ardmore. And we're remembering the life and times of the man that's certainly gone from our midst, but never forgotten there. The melody is, I suppose, the song, Jim's song has ended, but his melody will linger on in our hearts for a long, long time.